This podcast is being created on the lands of the traditional owners, the Wurundjeri and Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation. I would like to acknowledge and pay my respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. I would like to acknowledge their connections to the land, sea, and the community. Sovereignty was never ceded, always was, always will be.
Welcome to All's Fair,
and this is a pilot episode of our new show. It is all about fun and games and joyfulness. My name is Chloe, and I am a master's student at La Trobe University. I am also an artist and musician. I perform under the name Doozy, and over here I have Josh.
Hello, I'm Josh.
Tell us about yourself, Josh.
I am a fellow board game enthusiast.
Yes.
You may recognize my voice from a
podcast
called Loss of Lieutenant. I run a Infinity game, which is a war game, much like Warhammer, Infinity game podcast, where we talk about all things Infinity. So I'm very well practiced at nerdy,
really deep, in-depth
discussions
on
very, very niche topics,
board games.
Yeah. I am also a paramedic in Melbourne, Victoria, Australia. Right.
So this show is divided into three segments. The first segment is one of us has brought a game to play that we are going to teach the other person the game, and we've also researched the history of that game. Some of the games we find are going to have lots of information on them, and then some games are not going to have that much information. And so I guess this podcast aims to be a platform to share this information long and collect it in a format that's fun for everyone to hear. The second segment is we're going to ask a question that we've researched, researching questions all about fun and games. And then the last section is we're going to play a game or puzzle that's more about the mind, so it doesn't cost anything to play these games. These are sort of games you play when you're on long car trips, you know, into the middle of nowhere, as most families do in Australia, and a way of, I guess, exercising your brain as well. They could also be games that you play when you, like, can't sleep, or as games that you play with yourself when you're waiting for a bus or if you're having anxiety. I know I play a lot of these games in my mind.
Yes.
But they can also be played with someone else. So
yeah, the aim of the game is to, obviously introduce and review fun little games that we come across. So yeah, board games, card games, everything like that, as
yeah,
well as assess their difficulty and accessibility.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how fun they are to play, obviously, with just the two of us. Until such time that we
yeah,
get other friends.
Until we find some other people who are interested in playing weird board games at length.
Lots of people are interested in playing weird game board games at length.
Yeah.
And people will come out of the work as soon as we tell them that we want to play with people.
I mean, already our tech person helping us to get day was amazing and obsessed with board games. So I'm already excited to – I was excited because I guess this idea has been in our brain for like a little bit, and then me to – discuss with Tegan, and then she's like, this is such a good idea, and I was like, oh my god, it's not a bad idea.
Very much in Chloe's brain and on my Instagram DMs.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is an idea. Fabulous.
Yeah, we're gonna take these episodes almost in pairs. Well, one of us is going to present a board game to the other person,
or card game
as it were, And we're going to play that game, and then we're going to have a fun little rating system, which you guys will find out about soon. And then the other person will pose a question that they have researched, or a little fact that they've researched about board games or card games or games in general or fun or magic or something that they've researched over the week. Just to bring a little bit of education and science.
My favourite thing.
Yeah, we love a bit of education.
I love the combination of games and science.
You're going to love my fact. so today I think Chloe is going to teach me a game. So
I know. I'm really excited that you don't know this game.
I don't know this game.
This is my favourite game. Okay. So this is a game called Spit. So what's your team name this week?
My team name this week?
Yeah.
Oh, I
want to write it down. Just off the dome. Just off the dome. We need team names.
So call me Boys and Ghouls.
Boys and Ghouls.
It's just Boy and Ghoul.
Boy and Ghoul.
But the same.
Boy.
It's me. I'm the boy and the ghoul.
Boy and ghoul. G-H? Yeah.
O-U-L.
All right. Boy and Ghoul.
Boy and Ghoul. That's my team name.
And my team name will be Coffee Bean Chloe. Yeah. Coffee Bean Chloe.
So what's your team name, Chloe?
Coffee Bean Chloe.
Coffee Bean Chloe. It's because she doesn't have any energy until she's fully roasted.
All right. So we are playing also for Bilbies.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of each match, we'll get given a Bilby. And as we collect more Bilbies, we'll also raise the stakes. So at the moment, our biggest stake we've pitched is if we get to 100 patrons or followers, one of us, whoever's winning, has to get a tattoo chosen by the other person.
Oh, my goodness.
No. So whoever's losing has to get a tattoo chosen by the other person.
This means that Chloe's getting a tattoo chosen by the other person. good. That's a good clarification.
And then whoever loses has to pay $100, $100 dues to a charity chosen by the winner.
Yeah, $100 dues is Chloe's way of saying 10 Australian dollars.
$100 dues. And I guess having that is also to just promote charities that are doing good in the world, I think, because it'd be fun to just find charities.
Absolutely.
And give them a platform to promote what they're doing.
Okay. Let's kick off, shall we?
All right. So Spit is not a super common game. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, I find it perplexing that you haven't heard of it. But me and my sisters used to play it all the time. And I loved it because my board game obsession came from my sisters never letting me win because I'm the baby. And so then once I started winning at games, I became obsessed with playing them. Because I became semi-decent at them. Spit, I remember in grade 6, you know, like at the end of the school year, it's Christmas time and all you're doing in primary school is like colouring sheets about Christmas and you have to move the furniture because they have to steam clean the floor. Did you ever have that in primary school?
Like, no.
Okay, so every Maybe. Year, the Maybe. Last week of school, you did nothing. I started teaching this game to everyone and we ended up being so into it that everyone in the class was playing it and I was the spit champion of grade 6.
If I get spit on,
no,
I'm going to be really upset.
So researching this game was really hard because it's not your standard game. Like, it's not like solitaire or what's like a common card game like craps or something like poker that you play. So it was really hard to find where this game specifically comes from. Now, the earliest record I could find of this game is actually from Mississippi, a girls' college called Gulf Park College for Women in Mississippi, America. So they had a student magazine called Tammy Howe. And it's a comedy piece that is incredible, okay? So it's called Table Talk. Dear gentle ? Students, I know Tammy has received several letters from various sources, but I'm willing to bet my four legs that no table has ever written to it as I am doing now. I am a nice card table, clean and sturdy, with four good legs. I was lonesome all last summer, but last fall, when I saw all the girls coming to school, I was happy again. I was moved with another friendly table into the senior smoker. We were immediately set up and came of use again. It was heaven to be in there with 40 attractive girls. They played that good, quiet game of bridge on me. I enjoyed that thoroughly. But just before Christmas vacation, something hit them and they began to play spit on me. I don't mean what most people think of when I say that. I mean the card game spit. It is on the order of solitaire. You turn up only one card instead of three and build up or down with the opposite colour that is turned up. A very amusing game, but oh, so rough. I shuddered at the sight of Pinky and Nenon. Pinky was forever yelling spit before the others and turned up their cards. And Nenon, wham, she really slapped those cards down. Of course, Selby and Billy were always in there slinging them down too. As a matter of fact, the whole senior class was spit crazy. Life today is almost back to normal. The familiar cry, who will be a fourth, is coming back into style. And now I can settle down to a calm spring. Thank goodness the rage is over. Forever golf parks, a card table. How great is it?
What year was that written?
I did write it down. 1943. Oh. So this is the oldest reference to the game spit I could find. That was clearly this game. I think this was the funniest thing to come across, like so unexpected. So the only other things I could kind of find in finding the like history of this game. So there's an amazing woman. Her name's Mary Whitmore Jones, and she's kind of like the mother figure of card games. So she's developed like a book of patience, and it has all these different versions of patience, and there is one game of patience which is called Pirate Patience, which looks similar and seems to be played very similarly as you would play spit.
Right.
So that's a bit, that's like 1800s, late 1800s, but that's as far back as I could go with spit. So yeah, that's the history of this game. And I just kind of love that table joke reminds me so much of grade six teaching everyone this game. So, spit is a shedding game.
I don't know what that means.
So, a shedding game is you're trying to get rid of all your cards. So, similar to Uno. So, it comes under the bracket of Uno. I feel like we'll eventually have to have, like, Umbrella, and then we can categorize all these different games.
We can do that, yeah.
You just play with 52 cards. You can double it if you want to play for a long time.
Sure.
So the game's also done in rounds. We'll play a set and then we reset and start again.
Right.
Sweet.
Right. Good thing that you managed to find some reference to this, because I was starting to get skeptical and thought that you just made this game up just to win.
I know. I'm going to have to actually find games that I can play. So this game is actually a game of speed as well. So you split the deck up.
Did you just?
Yeah. I just halved it.
Yep.
You're going to set it up like solitaire. So you flip one, and we're doing five brackets. Hey everybody, Chloe in the editing room. We had a bit of technical difficulties on the day, and so we will not be including the gameplay in this podcast. The video version, we hope to eventually include a gameplay, but for now it is just going to be us cutting straight to talking about what we think of the game. Thank you.
All right. Well, that's Spit. What did you think?
As a first timer and a person who didn't spend years and years and years and years playing this when I was a child with no friends. Yeah, that was
so rude. I had friends. I had sisters.
No, I was a child with no friends and I didn't spend. Yeah, no, it was fun. Yeah, it was good. You know, it's simple. It's easy.
Okay.
It's,
what would you rate it on close hardness scale?
Well, the close scale of hardness is definitely a close thing.
Oh, okay. Well, I would put it in swing of things. I think it's a really relatively easy game, but
it's an easy game. It's just you need
to get into the swing of things. Yeah, you've got to just kind of flesh it out. and then you can get into the get the runs and stuff like that. And you can also then play with three players, and you can
Add it seems like you can scale it out.
Yeah, and you can then add a second deck if you want to make it longer, like, you know, if you're on a trip away.
Chloe asked me to think of a topic to research, and I decided to have a think about what game I would like to introduce to Chloe next time. And I thought I would run into it a little bit by not giving any spoilers, but I decided to have a look at the history of cooperative board games, or modern cooperative board, what we would consider a cooperative board game. Because as I've gotten older and
I'm trying so hard not to make an old joke now.
Wow. I've gotten older and played more games and stuff like that. I tend to find that I prefer the experience of a cooperative game more than the
He says now after talking so much smack just before.
It's just part of me. But, you know, you get stressed at the game rather than stressed at each other. And I think that that's a much more preferable experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, it puts a lot of – I love the sort of authorial voice it gives – the cooperative board games gives to game designers.
Mm.
I'm a big big D&D fan and things like that. So I like being able to experience the voice and vision of the game designer through the medium of their literal voice when they've put this game to words.
I never thought about it like that. Like the designer is a storyteller as well, isn't it?
100%.
And I just played Wingspan for the first time played it cooperatively.
What a game.
And it was so fun just learning about birds and then having a fun little, like, it was summer in Sydney. Yeah.
Beautiful.
I loved it. I can't wait to play again with, like, the expansion packs.
Wingspan's an amazing game. So that's sort of why I decided to broach this topic, the history of modern cooperative board games. Fitting with this little podcast that we've decided to put together is that cooperative games were actually used primarily by teachers in educational settings.
What?
Yeah. So the first... first evidence that we have of a patented cooperative board game is actually the precursor to Monopoly in 1903 by a designer called Elizabeth Maggie, patented a game called The Landlord's Game, which was...
Oh, this is the precursor to Monopoly, yeah?
This was the precursor to Monopoly.
Oh, yes.
So the Landlord's Game had two rule sets. So Elizabeth Maggie decided to have two rule sets for her game. The first game was the Monopoly game, so where players competed against each other to basically stamp out the competition, build a monopoly, all that kind of stuff.
Anyone unfamiliar with the game Monopoly, just tune into Australian news and the housing crisis.
Same game. I bought a house on Pall Mall. Cooperative version was the anti-Monopoly.
Did you just call it Pall Mall?
Pall Mall, yeah, that's how it's pronounced.
I always called it Pall Mall.
No, it's Pall Mall. You've never been to Britain.
I have been. I've lived there as well. Is it called Pall Mall?
It's Pall Mall.
Then again, everything in London's pronounced weird.
Yeah.
Like Greenwich.
Yeah.
Sure. I was pronouncing it Greenwich until someone turned around to me and was like,
"It's Greenwich,
Chloe."
So the Landlord's Game had a Monopoly and an anti-Monopoly rule set. So the anti-Monopoly rule set was a where players work together to build everybody's real estate up rather than crushing your opponents by, you know, beating them out with all that kind of stuff. I've not played the anti-Monopoly rule set, but I don't think it exists anymore.
I reckon we should find it.
We should find it. I reckon we should find it. The reason it was developed that way was that she wanted a dualistic approach as a teaching tool and basically saying that sharing and cooperative play is morally superior to Monopoly, to competitive.
Take note, grocery duopoly of Australia.
Yes. Morally superior. So working together
in the words of Bob the Builder, gets the job done. And then sort of that was the earliest sort of version of a cooperative board game.
That's so fascinating that it was a teaching tool, because when you were like, where it came from, my first thing was like army.
Ah, right. Yeah, like war games kind of stuff. Yeah, that's fundamentally competitive.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. One side versus the other.
Wow. I guess this is what the podcast is going to be. It's me actually learning. Wow. Oh, don't.
Wow.
We're going to get that a lot.
We are.
I can't wait to learn and find out more things about the world. Like, I'm so excited.
During the early 20th century, sort of early and early mid 20th century, more competitive board games came out, and that was due to sort of like the sort of what we would say is the Hasbro kind of games that we have at the moment. So Scrabble or Monopoly, they were all starting to sort of flesh out, become the board games of play. And then in the 50s, there was a game show called Beat the Clock. And a board game version of that show, Beat the Clock, came out, and that was a cooperative board game that was brought out in 1955.
Wow.
Yeah, and then they started really kicking off in the 70s. So in
I guess that's like television.
Yeah,
becoming more popular.
So a teacher published a cooperative board game called Together in 71, and founded a board game company called Family Pastimes, which was developed exclusively to produce cooperative board games. Released over 100 board games under that 100 cooperative board games under that Family Pastimes thing.
As in 100 different themes.
100 different games, yeah.
Oh, wow.
That company, Family Pastimes, also holds the trademark for the term cooperative game.
Can you that's bizarre to me. Yeah. God. Yeah. And that's ironic because they're trademarking it to have the monopoly.
Yes. So things will say co-op or anything. They won't say cooperative or anything like that, because Family Pastimes apparently has the patent for it. Family Pastimes was apparently the producer of a apparently popular board game called Max the Cat. Now, I'm not from the 70s, so I don't know Max the Cat, and I don't really care.
I love it. I can't wait to find these games play them.
And also kicking off in the 70s were a couple of Colesbans. So Ken and Jan Colesban founded Animal Town in 76.
Is that a precursor to Animal Crossing?
No, the Animal Town was the company, and they invented cooperative board games Save the Whales, Nectar Collector, and Dam Builders, and among others.
Oh my God, environmentally conscious, love it.
Animal Town was renamed Child and Nature in 2003, so it's still a company that's around today creating cooperative board games. And then I did say it all kicked off in the 70s, but the massive resurgence and rise of these sorts of style of a different style of cooperative game, which is sort of the one we play mostly nowadays, is the adventure game, was the 80s. So the big one that's still around today is the one called Arkham Horror. So Arkham Horror was first published in the 80s. It's a cooperative board game where you play against the game.
Is that the one we played?
We haven't played Arkham
Horror. We haven't played it? No. What's the one I'm thinking? Is it Cthulhu?
It is Arkham Horror is around Cthulhu, yeah. Okay. So, you play in the world of H.P. Lovecraft, you play as investigators and you're trying to beat the cultists and all that kind of junk. And that's the way the game is sort of working against you. They also did The Wreck of the BSM Pandora and Time Tripper. And then the Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective series of games was published in the 1980s, where the players are presented with a mystery to solve. And then the big ones were role-playing elements like HeroQuest, which was huge, Citadel of Blood, the Wizards board game, and Advanced HeroQuest and Death Maze were all released in the 80s. So 80s was kind of the big boom of cooperative board
games. Well, I guess it's when D&D also caught on. Became most popular, other than today.
Well, D&D most came popular probably in the late 2000s, but it definitely it was started in the 70s.
Yeah,
And then hit its sort of like peak popularity, not peak, but obviously peak popularity now, but it hit early peak, its early peak popularity in the 80s. Yeah. And so obviously people were trying to, maybe were a bit scared of DMing and decided that they wanted to play a game without the DM, which is how I often like to play, why I often
That's
like
because
to play.
You are always the DM,
I
aren't you?
I love to play cooperative board games because yeah. I don't have to DM them. And so that's sort of a brief history.
That's so fascinating.
Of the modern board game. My favourite bit about that was the fact that the cooperative rule sets were morally superior. Yeah. So
what happens when all the woolies burns down? What are we left with?
Just coals.
Just coals.
Oh, that's fantastic. This has been a history of board games with Josh.
Yay! Woo. That was actually really fascinating.
It's good.
I mean, I'm a big fan of the woman that invented Monopoly and the other one. What's it called?
It was called the Landlord's Game.
The Landlord's Game.
Which is awfully fun.
I feel like it needs to have a resurgence today because everyone needs, that board games are a vessel to learn. And so people can actually learn that maybe how Australia's in the current housing crisis.
Yeah,
it's quite relevant.
My parents have the board game at home called Cashflow. And it's
that's a teaching game, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So it's from the writer of a financial help book called Rich Dad Poor Dad, and he talks about making proper investments and all that kind of stuff. And the aim of the game Cashflow is to do. You've got there's two boards, and you have to do. You have to run around the rat race. Which
are
is
you a rat?
You are a rat. Yeah, you're a rat in the game. And the rat race. Well, the rat race is a common term for.
I'm gonna be Remy.
Rat race is a common term for like the sort of drudgery of like 9 to 5 working, like, or having to work for a living, basically. Mm. And when you escape the rat race, or you leave the rat race when you have passive income. Mm. And so cash flow is designed about you're given a job. And your job will earn you a certain amount of money per month. And the aim to get out of the rat race, you have to increase your passive cash flow to meet your active working wage.
Yeah. Yeah.
So once your monthly cash flow.
That doesn't feel like a game, that just feels like real life.
It is real life. It's also much easier than real life. I mean, you just buy investments and those investments work out for you and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, my goodness.
I quite like it. It's a silly little Monopoly board game, but it was enjoyable when I was a child. So it should be fun now.
I guess, it's that common trope of when you're little, all you want to do is grow up. And then when you're a grown up, you're like, oh, damn it. I really wish we had scheduled nap time.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, Spain's pretty on the ball with with seances, with siestas. Yes.
We should have siestas here.
We 100% need to invest in a infrastructure that involves siesta. Okay, so third section and final section is mention what. So, Spit. Whether it's accessible.
You want to do that.
We need to figure that out. So I would say, I guess visually, you would need to be. Actually, no, because I bought some Braille cards, but I forgot to bring them today, and I really wanted to play with them.
I can't read Braille, so.
Well, I figured if I start playing, like, Patience and stuff with them, eventually I can play.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
I can play Patience at night. By myself with Braille cards.
You've proven that you can play Spit one-handed.
Yeah, which is good to know. I mean, I lost use of my hand, and my right hand's more dodgy than my left hand, so I can play with one hand. So I feel like it's pretty accessible in that department. I mean, you don't have to call out Spit as well at the end, so you can play mute. In terms of inclusivity, I'm going to have to do more research to see how far. I feel like we might need to introduce the inclusivity later on.
We can do that.
Because I'd love to set up the website as interactive, so then people can be like, oh, I know of this game, or I have a book, or maybe someone can submit it. That'll be really cool.
Yep.
To use Discord with the discussion. Okay, so the last section is playing a mind game or puzzle. So the other day we were actually playing this. So this week we're going to talk about Malifaux. Malifaux are a way of being creative.
Malifaux are a literary device where you take common idioms and you mess them up don't actually don't mean anything.
But I feel like they bring on new meaning.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Well, they definitely, yes.
Which, by the way, actually, I was at the library yesterday and I saw a book that said De Beers, Poop in the Woods. And I forgot to take a photo of it and to send it to you.
So what's the Malifaux game?
So the Malifaux, my personal favourite Malifaux is Do Popes Poop in the Woods?
Mm-hmm. So a common, obviously, do bears poop in the woods and does the Pope have a balcony?
Is the Pope Catholic?
Oh, same. Does the Pope Catholic? Does the Pope
Why?
Have a balcony?
I didn't know. It's inferred that if you're a Pope, you have a balcony.
The Pope does his masses in the Vatican Square from
outside
his balcony.
Does he?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Gosh, that must be cold in the winter.
It's Rome. Outside. There's no winter.
Oh.
It's very balmy.
I didn't know they did outside. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Gosh, yes. We just assume someone has a balcony?
Yeah,
gosh.
The Pope has a balcony.
Okay.
And he does his masses from the balcony.
Mm.
Look it up.
I'd love to know if he goes camping so we can confirm whether Pope's pooping or...
I don't think this Pope goes camping currently.
Yeah, but
as a Pope, probably not.
Yeah, but... Popes have downtime.
So, does a bear poop in the woods and does the Pope have a balcony? Is the Pope Catholic?
Is a bear Catholic?
Are ways to say, obviously, yes.
Yes.
You know, the answer to the question is yes. So we sarcastically say, is the Pope Catholic? So does the Pope poop in the woods is a mess up of those two metaphors or idioms to mean, obviously, yes, the Pope poops in the woods.
Over-analysis of this is chef's kiss.
That's not over-analysis. That's
I love
perfectly
it.
Reasonable.
What other favourite ones do you have?
Is this the game? Is the game
Yeah,
just,
this is the game.
Oh, the game
we
is just
talk about
we just
them.
Talk about.
And we make some up.
We make, all right.
And then I reckon.
Well, my favourite one, I think, is we'll burn that bridge
yeah,
when we come
I was going to say that's one of my top.
Yeah, which is obviously a mess up, a mash up of we'll burn your bridges. Inflame, more put flame to relationships and things and cut off contact and like ruin networking. And we'll cross that bridge when we get to it, meaning that we'll take things as they come and we'll take things in our stride. And if things mess up, then we'll deal with that. But we'll burn those bridges when we get to them is as soon as I make a connection with someone, I'm going to throw it in the bin.
Is that what you interpret it
yeah,
as?
Yeah, that's 100% what it means.
I when I say it, I always say it like in the same context as we'll cross that bridge when we get to
it. That's not
but also we'll create chaos when we get there, because I feel like that's what I do whenever I end up somewhere at my anxiety and like.
You just create chaos.
Just create chaos.
Yeah,
so chaos. That's how I use. I'll burn that bridge when I get to it. Like,
right.
Deal with it later.
Sure.
I know it's going to be a disaster, but it's going to be fun.
That's the main thing. As long
yeah,
as
that's
fun.
How I interpret that one. What once did we? I started a little note in my phone with some fun ones.
You can flog a dead horse, but you can't make a drink. That's always a good one.
Oh, you can, and that's you can take a horse to water, but you can't make a drink.
Yes, and flogging a dead horse.
Where there's smoke, there's a DJ.
Yes.
It's not rocket surgery.
Rocket surgery is
rocket
a
surgery is a good one.
Something about waiting for small packages.
Waiting for small packages?
Yeah, good things come to those who wait, and good things come in small packages. So
yeah.
You wait longer for small packages. It's probably true.
Jens.
I think that you have your choice of your favourite one. I have my choice of my favourite one.
And we should do a poll.
No.
Oh,
I think we should have people...
bring in their favourites?
Yeah.
So this is just a like a little.
It's a brain exercise.
Yeah, a little brain exercise. I'm trying to think of other outro. To say that this has been All's Fair, and I've been Josh, and I've been joined by Chloe, and we'd like to just put it to you to like, comment, subscribe on all your platforms.
Which we will build eventually.
You'll find a link to our socials, including Discord and Facebook and Instagram, in the description, wherever you get this podcast or video. So like, comment, subscribe, leave us a review. And if you could include your favourite Malifaux.
Yeah, leave a review with your favourite Malifaux.
In it, we'll create a list of them. We'll read our favourite ones out.
That'd be so fun.
The next episode. How about that?
Yeah, that's such a good idea.
That's a good idea. Goodbye, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
So much.
Enjoy your games of spit.
Yeah. I don't have any. I mean, that's you it. Summed up Goodbye. Everything so beautifully.
Well, that's what I do.
Well, thank you.
That's what I do. Thank you.
No, thank you.
Thank you
so much for listening to our first episode of All's Fair. If you enjoyed this, please chuck us a follow on your streaming site, as well as leave us a review, please, so that I can prove to my parents that my hex debt was not for nothing. You can also join us in discussion on social media. We are at All's Fair Team. This is hopefully the first of a long journey of research and learning, and I would love to engage with you online on these various topics. Finally, I want to give my thanks and appreciation to Callum and Jack, who helped me write the opening theme music, as well as Tegan and the Equipment and Loans team. And I'd like to thank Kayla from the Indigenous Services team at La Trobe for helping me write the Acknowledgement of Country. If you enjoyed this, make sure you tell people about it. This has been All's Fair. Bye!